From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, in the first part of the show, Jason Bartow, certified arborist and executive director of ReLeaf Utah, joins us to talk about what's happening there in ReLeaf this autumn, in these autumnal days, and also some news, I believe, on white fir. He says that it's having some challenges associated with it. As he's put it, they're being attacked.
That's right. It sounds like there's some emerging pests. I ran into him the other day, and it's more than one. So,
all right. It's a trend. It could be a trend.
That's right. Breaking news.
As soon as he gets into the studio, we will talk to him. We promise.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll speak with Will Falk. He's a local resident and a lawyer who, along with four others from around the Colorado River's Upper Basin, recently filed the first ever Rights of Nature lawsuit. Colorado River versus Colorado in the United States District Court for Colorado.
The lawsuit seeks personhood. Personhood for the river, literally the right of the Colorado River to exist, flourish, regenerate, and naturally evolve. Will Falk is serving as a guardian of the river's interest in court. He joins us in the studio to discuss this suit and what implications it might have for other bodies of water and ecosystems like it.
All that, and it's time to cover some news that we didn't get to last week, including a recent survey that shows who truly supports Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments. Hint.
Men.
No, you're always on the wrong side. Women are one of those groups, but we'll get into that later.
All right. And some news with respect to the hazardous waste collection event that occurred this past Saturday. How many cars showed up? What was dropped off? Pretty interesting. I will give you some preliminary numbers on what that event looked like.
Remember, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain instructors share their love of skiing and snowboarding with guests, helping them improve their skills and enjoy the mountain. More information on Ski and Snowboard School and other programs at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us shortly will be Jason Bartow. He's the executive director of ReLeaf Utah and a certified arborist. I believe he's on his way in the
studio. He should be here any minute.
Live radio. That's what
not a lot of buffer.
As in zero buffer. But in the meantime, let's fill some otherwise dead air with an event that's coming up. Just a reminder. And here's Jason.
We don't even need to cover the
event. We'll get to that event on Climate Change Education Series at Temple Har Shalom. That's starting next week, October 8th. We'll give you some more details on it. It's a two-part event at Temple Har Shalom on two Sundays, the 8th and the 15th. We'll give you details maybe a little later on that. But joining us in studio is Jason Bartow. He is the executive director of ReLeaf Utah and also a certified arborist. And he's here to talk about, well, what he usually brings to the studio, all things about trees. And let's start with, you got some calendar events, activities you probably want to cover. But let's start with this. You emailed us and chatted with Nell briefly about some issues going on with white fir.
Yes.
Well, first of all, what is a white fir? I never knew there was such a thing.
Oh, so the white fir is actually... a conifer that comes in as part of the progression of the forest, and it comes in after the aspen trees. And if you look around, particularly in the Silver Lake area, you can see a white fir growing right next to the aspen tree, and eventually it outcompetes the aspen tree. But the aspen tree provides enough shade and moisture for the conifer to take root, and then the white fir as a conifer and evergreen then uses its evergreenness to eventually outgrow the aspen.
That's interesting. So the aspen actually serves as an initial host to the fir.
Yes.
And then loses out.
It loses out. Yeah, it's part of nature's transitional forest.
Until something, you know, an avalanche comes through, and then the aspen will come back.
Is that it? Is that how that works too?
Yeah, they come back first. Yeah. It's the early succession, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. All right. Exactly.
So hang on. Before we move on from describing the white fir, Jason, if we look out the window, can we see any white fir here from the studio? We obviously see, you know, some aspen, some gambles oak, maybe some big tooth maple.
I want to say the ones that have, let's say, shall we say, use the term golden brown?
Okay.
are most likely white fir up there.
Okay.
You mean the dead ones?
Yes. I was trying to have a less, you know,
a more
positive viewpoint.
Okay. A warm golden color.
Because even though they're dead, they'll fall down, they'll regenerate.
Right.
They'll make the forest healthy again. So they're taking a temporary break from photosynthesizing.
Okay. Is there a reason why we're seeing those?
The simplest explanation is the drought that even though we had a reprieve this last year, 1 year does not recharge our watershed and our water system. Yeah. So just like any of the other bark beetles that have gone after our conifers or other trees, the root cause is really drought. And then maybe throw in a little overcrowding and a little bit more challenge from our population. But really, it's a moisture issue.
Okay. It's not a bug issue?
Well, the moisture weakens the bug. And right now, I am officially not able to confirm nor deny, but local tree workers have seen what they believe to be a balsam bark beetle, a fir tip engraver, and a twig girdler. So
you're being serious.
I am. We're seeing a triple whammy thrown at our white firs. And it's kind of a bummer because for me, for quite a while, the white fir was like, nobody's attacking it. It's a good tree to keep utilizing.
Right.
But this combination of drought and the arrival of, or, you know, most of these live in the natural environment, but giving them stressed out trees to attack has given them a chance. And it's been really confusing as an arborist because you'll see different manifestations of it. Typically, the tip girdler kills interior needles but leaves the new stuff green. The fern graver usually kills from the top down. And the balsam beetle usually kills from the bottom up.
So you got a beetle, a girdler, and an engraver.
Yes. And the engraver, I want to say, is also in the beetle family. Yes.
Okay.
So that's what's causing the issue. There is not a official treatment, even with nasty chemicals out there, that is endorsed by anybody in the U.S. However, I understand that there is a tree company in the area that has created a potion that they are claiming 4 years, 100% success rate with no attacks on their white firs.
Whoa. 4 years.
Okay.
That's some potion.
Yeah, and they're actually going to enter into a testing phase to see whether it's actually truly effective or it's just kind of one of those that he got lucky by the trees they put it on. For right now, really, the best thing we could do is, if you live close to some white firs, identify which ones you really want to keep. And I know this sounds crazy, but run a drip irrigation system out to them or get some water on those gigantic trees that you want to protect that might be around your house.
Right.
And maybe consider a chemical treatment that may even be unproven right now in order to preserve the tree. We're also talking and suggesting that some of the ski resorts think the same thing. You know, keep the big tree at the top of the tree, the little island that separates the runs, because if you lose that entire little grove, we're now just above tree line skiing
right
on there. So strategically look at what you might be able to put some water to. And I know it sounds completely crazy,
right?
But we're sort of at that point after, you know, seeing some of the other battles we've had.
So with these three insects, were they active elsewhere in the U.S. and now they're just coming to this part of Utah? Or what's the history with them?
I can't claim a complete understanding of their origin. My understanding is they're not exotic pests.
Okay.
They exist as part of the ecosystem to help thin out weak trees, just like the majority of the bark beetles. But just like the bark beetles that have taken out Brian Head and parts of the Uintas, they've capitalized on warmer winters, stressed out trees.
Mm-hmm. Drought.
Drought.
Stressed out trees via the drought.
Yeah, you know, warmer times so they don't get killed over the winter, not super cold winters.
Yeah.
And, you know, at times, wildfire is a cleansing process that would destroy a lot of these insects that were on the ground taking care of fallen trees, helping them degrade and get back into the environment.
Right.
So it's a hugely complex problem if you look at it. But the bottom line is drought to me. The simplest.
I think that's such a good perspective though too, to talk about what their role is in a healthy ecosystem. They do have a role. Dead trees are important to so many animals. They need to decompose. But what's out of whack is the hydrologic system.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And so to me, that's why it's really important that we do as much as possible to take care of our urban and community forests, because it doesn't necessarily make sense to fly over all the white fur and spray them from a helicopter.
Right.
You know, it's expensive. It's not necessarily ecologically friendly on there. And there's going to be people saying, I don't have any white fur, or I didn't want mine treated.
Yeah, and it could be ineffective anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, it comes back around to why we like to focus on urban and community tree planting projects. Is because we're in an area, though it's more challenging, we can actually control a lot of the environmental factors that make a tree successful or not successful. You know, and some of that, you know, and we've said it before, but mulch your trees.
Yeah.
Put the mulch down around your trees. That'll help your new trees, your old trees, get rid of that water-sucking grass that does very little to the environment, and put wood chips around those trees.
Okay.
To help them out, make them healthier. That's going to make them less resistant. The second thing is to make sure that you water our trees down here. You know, one big, you know, winter does not recharge the groundwater that some of the trees would rely on that are established to get some water. So give your tree a drink. I was just reading a brochure. We may have talked about this before, but if we have a dry winter and you have a day or two, it's above 40, get a little water on your trees. A bucket of water, two buckets of water are going to be great. And then also be aware of this fall. My sprinkler guy, and I have some grass, I admit it. I have two dogs. They love it. But he wanted to come and blow out my sprinkler system yesterday. And I said, hey, we've had warm summers. So I want to at least be able to keep the irrigation on for my trees and be able to get them into November before we shut off the water. And that's something I strongly encourage people to do around here, particularly if you have newly planted trees. It seems to be that, you know, just like the summer begins with Memorial Day, that October 1 is when we turn down off our irrigation systems. And that's not really that, again, that's something we used to do, but now you have to do it with a degree of caution. And if you do have to shut off to protect it from freezing, get the hose out and get some water on those conifers. And again, particularly the new ones that may have been planted in the last month or two.
Okay, that's what you mean by new?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. We're speaking with Jason Bartow. He is a certified arborist and executive director of ReLeaf Utah. We got a few more minutes. Jason, What else is going on? You, speaking of planting.
Mm-hmm. Wait, actually, before, can I ask one more question on this subject before we move on too much? If people are, you know, have a white fir in their yard or their landscape and they are interested in protecting it, is there something they can look for? Like, you know, sure signs of these insects? I mean, you mentioned sort of, you know, dying needles and things. Do you see the insects themselves?
Not unless you get up into the tree. They're really tiny little guys.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it's really hard to detect. I'd say if you see sap or pitch running down the tree anywhere, that's one sign. And if you see some browning on the tree, particularly at the top, I'd suggest you contact a certified arborist. There's three or four of us here in the county, and have us come out and take a look and give you an exact diagnosis of what you're facing. And again, strengthening with mulch and water is your first best case, so you're not calling myself or another consulting arborist in the county to deal with your trees.
So
proactive care to increase the vigor of your trees is our best defense right now.
Okay.
So just like being a healthy human, you know,
mulch and water.
Exactly.
That's what I well, trail mix and water. That's what I need. But seeing browning on the needles or so doesn't mean that it's too late.
It does not.
Okay, so don't have
don't go in a
view.
Huge panic yet.
Yeah.
There. Usually, once we start to see a third to half of the tree, then it's more of a time to be worried. But trees are such wonderful organisms. I like to tell people that everything I say about a tree or trees, there is a tree out there that's going to completely disprove me. It's going to, and so I've seen some incredible recoveries of trees.
Okay.
You know, once we've given them a little supportive care.
All right. Trees are living things. They're people too, aren't they?
And that's a whole nother chat.
It will in a few minutes, yeah. Whether or not they have standing. Do trees have standing? All right. Last couple minutes. Calendar of events?
We have our harvesting? Unfortunately, our apple harvest this year was next to nothing.
Wow.
Oh. We think a late freeze. Both are in Midway and over in Camas, and I'm hearing from other people across the state that at least in this neck of the wood, harvesting was not, this was not a good year.
Wow.
So
no event associated with that.
We may do a little love your trees to get them ready for next year, but there's nothing for us to harvest this year.
Okay.
Our biggest event we have coming up, we're really excited about, is we're taking what was Wasatchback Trees, we're now Releaf Utah, and we're doing our first major project down in Salt Lake City. We received funding from Patagonia and from the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands, and our goal is to spend as much money as is possible to plant a tree. And what I'm saying is we are, anything we can control, soil mitigation, irrigation, soil quality, we'll be monitoring for 3 years afterwards. We're replanting the trees, and we're focusing right now in Northwest Salt Lake City because in our entire state, that seems to have the lowest incomes, lowest canopy cover, and worst health outcomes. So we've done that from a couple, GIS studies and people familiar with the ground. So we'll start off with a public planting on October 28th. And our goal is ultimately to get 60 trees into the ground this year. We've started a GoFundMe for that. And our goal after that is 1,000 trees. And I hate these number campaigns, but sometimes you have to do it. 1,000 trees over 5 years. And we are laying the groundwork for this to be a research study. We're using these air monitoring systems from a company called Purple Air. So for about $400, you can put an air monitoring system on your house, and it measures PM1s, 2.5s, and 10s.
Wow.
So we hope to look at the reduction in those as our trees grow. We're going to be tracking real estate values via the tax rolls, so we want to see property values go up. And we would love to tie in with a healthcare system once it privatizes or scrubs the data for privacy and be able to look at outcomes. And I want to say, is it Kaiser Permanente? Mm-hmm.
Permanente. Yeah.
They're starting a program in California where they have figured out how to sanitize the data and research are now looking into direct health outcomes in the neighborhoods compared with tree canopy. So they're getting really detailed information. And there's another healthcare company, I want to say in the Midwest, name escapes me, but they're actually contributing to community forestry programs because they recognize that trees provide health, healthy people, less costs, higher profits, which is a bummer part, but still, eventually, hopefully that brings everything down and greens it all up and we further impact how important trees are for our human health.
Our human health, our well-being, our emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
That's a great way to end.
Well, and then our program, one of our typical, so we're also going to be, instead of planting in the 2-foot park strip that kills trees every 6 to 7 years, we're moving onto a person's front yard and planting in their front yard. We're going to include an irrigation system of some variety on there. We will be monitoring the trees, mulching and pruning twice a year for 3 years.
Wow.
So our goal is $1,000 per tree. And people are like, oh, my God, what are you planting? And when you break down the cost of the aftercare, the irrigation, the soil mitigation, we're actually more like $1,400 a tree.
Yeah,
it's our volunteer labor and our donations that help us keep that price a little bit lower there. And like I said, our goal is to control everything possible. We're hand selecting the trees from the nursery to make sure we get the best trees possible in this planting. And our goal is 100% survival rate for 100 years.
Ooh,
so we're really
like
upping the game here. And there's academic research that backs up my sometimes crazy proclamations on how to plant trees. I don't just come up with this stuff at night. I read research papers.
And then you come up with crazy.
And then I come up with the crazy idea.
That's what you do. Jason Bartow, Executive Director with Releaf Utah, R-E-L-E-A-F Utah. Thanks again for coming in and sharing the information. You got 20 seconds.
20 seconds. We're also really excited that Park City Corporation, we are collaborating with them. They were awarded an $8,000 grant to try a new system called the Cocoon that's supposed to prolong the life of seedlings.
Ooh.
And so that's going to be an exciting project to try out and see if this new invention, if we can get seedling survival from 5% up to 60 or 70%, that'd be really awesome in our environment.
All right.
Some good work with Park City Municipal.
Thank you. And as always, great to have you. And we'll keep in touch. Get some update on cocoons, et cetera.
My pleasure being here. Thank you all.
Try to get here six minutes after 9 next time.
I will.
Much appreciated.
I'll take into account the Park City High School traffic jam.
All right. Yeah, perfect.
Thanks again, Jason. Let's take a quick break for some underwriters. When we come back, Will Falk joins us to talk about a lawsuit he's involved in.
That's right, Colorado River v. Colorado in the United States District Court for Colorado.
This is Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
United Concerts, a KPCW supporter, presents Alison Krauss and David Gray live on October 14th at USANA Amphitheater. Tickets on sale now at all SmithTix locations, smithtix.com, or by phone at 801-467-TIXX.
Back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the studio for the second half of the show is Will Falk. He's a local resident and lawyer who, along with 4 others from around the Colorado River's Upper Basin, recently filed the first ever Rights of Nature lawsuit, Colorado River v. Colorado. So, Will, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love your show and the work y'all do, so I'm excited to be here.
Well, we always love to hear that. Yeah. So tell us, I'm curious how this concept got started. You know, how did you and your colleagues decide, all right, we're gonna go for this?
Well, I think there's 2 ways to answer that. I can answer that on the personal level and then on perhaps the historical level. Just personally, I've been involved with activism for my entire adult life, and that has brought me to membership in an organization called Deep Green Resistance, and we are dedicated to environmental and social justice. But I think what sets us apart is a radical understanding that all life depends on the air we breathe, the water we drink, healthy soil. And through that, we've gained a reputation as people that would be willing to take on a lawsuit that seeks personhood for a river. But historically, I think the rights of nature is not at all a new concept. I think traditional cultures for the entire history until the last 10,000 years of humanity have had concepts similar to rights of nature. And those concepts allowed them to live in truly sustainable ways. So in a lot of ways, we feel like we're just helping the American legal system return to a more sustainable understanding of the natural world.
So talk about, give us the nuts and bolts of this lawsuit.
Yeah, so I think the coolest part is that the Colorado River is literally the only plaintiff. So you can say that the Colorado River is suing the state of Colorado in federal court. Currently in American law, rivers and other ecosystems are considered not legally competent. So it needs guardians, a legal concept called next friends, to represent the river's interests in court. But the arguments that we're making, we're seeking several legal tools, including injunctions. And an injunction is a court order to stop a certain activity. So if the Colorado River had standing and could ask for injunctions, it could ask the courts to stop things like pollution in the river's water. Another kind of secondary consideration would be money damages that would open up for ecosystems. And these damages could be used by conservation groups to repair ecosystems like the river. Mm-hmm. So those are the legal tools that we're seeking through the lawsuit.
Got it.
So this idea of standing, you're trying to define the river as, like you said, we said in our introduction, as literally a person that has standing. There's some precedent in the sense that do animals receive some form of standing? There's a way to draw connections, a linkage from humans to a river or an ecosystem, let's say, a watershed.
Right.
Can we work our way down from say animals to plants or so to a river or ecosystem as a whole?
Yeah, I think the first thing that our language in the actual complaint that we filed in court is very specific to describe the river as an ecosystem.
Yeah.
I guess another word for that would be a natural community.
Okay.
Instead of right now thinking about individual animals or individual trees, we're thinking of the whole ecosystem that the Colorado River is. In that way, we can protect a whole lot more life than individual animals.
So plants and animals, fish, reptiles, and everything is part of this river aspect then.
Yes.
The whole biosystem. Is that what you're looking for as having standing as a unit, though?
Yes, exactly. Okay. And the concept of standing has long been a controversial thing in the United States. So, in 1886 or in the mid 1880s, as many people are aware of, corporations were granting standing. Now, many people on the left would view a corporation as an abstraction and a tool used for corporate power. that actually doesn't exist. And a corporation who already has standing certainly doesn't support as much life as the Colorado River, which 40 million people in the United States depend mm-hmm. upon for drinking water. So there was a recent New York Times article written about our case, and the headline was, corporations have standing, why not rivers? And I think that's a great rhetorical point and really sums up in a lot of ways what we're talking about.
So in that same article that you just mentioned, they talk a little bit about some work in this area being done internationally in other countries, other places where nature does have standing or have these specific rights. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's been some great momentum in the last 5 or 6 years around the rights of nature. One of the most famous examples recently was a high court in India granted or recognized the rights of nature for the Ganges River. Other jurisdictions include New Zealand recognizes a few ecosystems as having rights, especially ones where indigenous peoples have really stood up for those ecosystems. The country of Ecuador a few years ago was revising their constitution, and they heard about a group in the United States called the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, who is helping us with this case. And they asked, CELDEF is the acronym, they asked them to come down and help them write the rights of nature into their constitution.
Wow.
So Ecuador literally has the rights of nature in their constitution. And I believe a year or two ago, a river in Ecuador was polluted by a gold mine spill, and the river sued the gold mine and won in Ecuador in courts. So it's getting traction around the world, and we hope to bring this into American courts in a real way.
But so this would be the first time this concept is being introduced into the court, courtroom.
This is the first time
in the U.S.
in federal courts specifically. Court. There have been some lower communities and localities that have brought similar suits within state courts, but this is the first time in the federal court system that this is happening.
So where does this go from here? What are the next steps?
Well, we're still waiting to get back court dates. We just filed it last week. So for our specific case, we will get court dates on the court's calendar. And you can follow along the news from that on a website called dgrnewsservice.org. But what we're really hoping is that similar communities can see what we're doing and figure out how to file similar lawsuits where they are. We think that if we can get enough of these lawsuits in front of the courts, in front of judges, find judges that are receptive to what we think is bringing the American legal system into the 21st century, responding to the environmental catastrophes that we're seeing, you know, almost daily nowadays. And we're just hoping to get that pressure on the courts and show them that this is really what the American people want, I think.
We're speaking with Will Falk. He's an attorney and a resident of Heber, lives down in Heber. And he's also a member of a group called Deep Green Resistance, who, along with several other attorneys or so, have filed a suit in Colorado District Court, which is a first ever that wants to give standing to the Colorado River and is, in fact, suing the state of Colorado. That's the defendant?
Yes, the state of Colorado is listed as the defendant, as along with the Colorado governor.
Yeah.
The reason that we bring the state of Colorado into the suit is they're responsible for a lot of the decisions that are made surrounding the river in Colorado, especially. Mm. So this is one of the most systemic institutions that we can address, and it just helps us dig even deeper into the problems facing the Colorado River.
So I'm really curious as to what the reaction has been. You just filed last week. There's already been an article in the New York Times. Has this been getting a lot of buzz? Have been people been reaching out?
Yeah, it has been getting a lot of buzz. And I think it's because a lot of people find this intuitive. A lot of people find this, when you hear that corporations have rights and the ecosystems that we all depend on don't, I think people, that's very logical to them. Why don't these ecosystems have rights? And why can't these ecosystems that support us protect themselves? There has been some of the typical, I would say, right-wing resistance to this, but that's to be understood. And I think corporations obviously will hate this because it takes away their right to destroy ecosystems. But to truly address the environmental problems facing us, I think that we're going to have to take a deep look at how corporations operate.
Have other environmental organizations reached out to you? Environmental Defense Fund, NRDC, Sierra Club?
Not those specifically, but yes, we're seeing more and more environmental groups take a look at this. The Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund and Deep Green Resistance are the two primary organizations that are really supporting this. We're hoping to find those communities where there are the resources to bring lawsuits like this, and really encourage people. We have our complaint we've posted online. You can read the whole thing. We think that it could be as simple as taking a lot of our complaint, and we openly encourage people to lift the text right off that complaint, and that can form your own complaint in a lawsuit. So we just really want to make clear that we encourage other people to do similar things.
So have you heard anything from Governor Hickenlooper from Colorado?
We have not yet heard
okay.
From the state of Colorado, but we eagerly anticipate their response.
I'm sure.
What would be a good outcome? I mean, there's a spectrum of outcomes, right? Everything from it gets thrown out entirely by the judge to, I guess that's one far side of the outcome spectrum, to what would be the ultimate or even just a good outcome as you see it?
Yeah. If this went all the way up to the Supreme Court and at each step of the way, the public is hearing these arguments and is following our story and starting to think in a more what we call biocentric way, life-centered way, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. I think the ultimate goal with this case is if human behavior is destroying the planet, and sociologists and psychologists have said that the way you change human behavior is through reward systems. There's no stronger reward system in the United States than the legal system. So if we could start to reward thinking that is sustainable by enforcing rights, then we could change human behavior and perhaps make the kind of systemic changes that we need to turn the planetary ship around.
So this is being filed in Colorado District Court. You said, and this, I guess this is an important point, you prefer to have a judge because ultimately this comes down to one person.
Mm-hmm.
A judge. It's not a panel of judges. It's a single judge who's going to hear this case and first accept it on its merits and then process it and render a decision.
Yeah.
So like you say, you chose Colorado District Court. You chose Colorado because of its setting and its conditions and such, its importance to the state of Colorado. But you got to find, a friendly, I don't want to say friendly judge, but a right judge, a fair judge.
Yeah. That is a great point about the legal system is so much of it depends upon one person's thinking. But there are if we get a unfavorable decision, then we can appeal to the 10th Circuit in Colorado. Okay.
So there's a process of appealing.
You find different judges in that way. And then if you still have something that's you can litigate, you can, in fact, appeal it up to the Supreme Court, which then you have nine minds thinking about it.
Yeah.
But yes, that's a great point. The legal system depends a lot on the opinions of one person or a few people. But that's also why we need to file a ton of these cases. And we need to put pressure in similar ways and in different, through different platforms to start to create this change.
Fantastic.
So in the event that this occur, that you got a favorable result, and then you could go forward in the Colorado River successfully, let's say, sues the state of Colorado. You said the consequences, or the, let's call it the downstream results of this, is that the Wasatch Back could sue the Wasatch Front for damages or something along those lines, or the city of Salt Lake City or Salt Lake County for damages or so. I'm trying to think of all the permutations here.
Absolutely. I think an exciting thing for people in Park City is we all are very aware of how climate change is affecting the community. If the Colorado River ecosystem and the Rights of Nature movement grew, we could see and we could implement here the rights of the Wasatch Back, the rights of the snow that falls here. And that would give us a much better way to protect the snow that comes here, to protect the ecosystems that are here. And yes, maybe it could force places like the Uinta Basin to drastically cut the fossil fuels that they are extracting. And we, instead of just being kind of ragtag environmentalists trying to stop it, we would have the support of the courts. And the courts have power within, you know, they can send the police to stop things. These are the tools that we're hoping to access. And Park City, I think, could do these kinds of things, and it could be very effective.
All right. So, again, kind of summarize, where do people go to find the full complaint?
It's on dgrnewsservice.org.
Okay.
We have uploaded it as a... the whole text of the complaint is there.
And like Nell said, there's an article in the Times on it, mm-hmm. and several other papers. You wrote an essay for the San Diego Free Press.
Yes.
There. And how about Deep Green Resistance? Where do we go to learn more about Deep Green Resistance?
It's deepgreenresistance.org.
Okay. And find out all about who you are,
read
what
all
else
about
you're doing.
Us and everything else we're doing.
It's interesting. We're always finding linkages between mm-hmm. one topic. And here we have Jason talking about the value of trees, you know, not just for ecosystem support, but the human benefits that trees mm-hmm. bring, or trees bring to humans, physical health, emotional
health,
mental health, the value. And in that sense, trees can have standing in that sense, or what, you know, you want to take it those. And then here you bring it to an even larger scale, ecosystem wide, watershed wide, standing for entire watersheds. It's a really interesting concept, and I wish you luck, and we'll be following that and probably have
That's
you back
right.
on to
keep
give
in
us
touch
update.
Keep well, us updated.
I will, for sure. And
right.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to
yeah.
speak about it.
And thank and we'll talk to you again.
Okay.
Thanks, Will.
Let's take a break for some underwriters and sponsors, and when we come back, we got some news items to cover.
That's right.
All right, it's This Green Earth. Stay with us.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. We got about 8 minutes for a few news items. We can do that.
Yeah, we can do that. And you know what I want to start with?
Yeah.
I want to start with this survey about who truly supports Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante, because I think there's a lot of debate about this. You know, we always hear like everyone supports it, nobody supports it, you know, and the reality is somewhere in between those two things. And so we've been trying to get to this for a couple weeks, and let's hear the details.
Yeah. So pollster Dan Jones and Associates, they do a lot of surveys throughout the state.
Huge firm, yeah.
A lot of credibility, a lot of professionalism behind them. So I trust their efforts and their numbers. It says a new survey shows more support to reduce Bear's Ears and more opposition to reducing Grand Staircase Escalante. So first, some general findings that they had. The Jones survey finds that 49% of Utahns support the president in reducing the size of Bear's Ears, not removing it entirely, but reducing the size of Bear's Ears.
So 49% of Utahns, citizens.
Just Utahns, okay. The survey. That's a good point. This is just with a survey of Utahns. 49% say, yeah, you know what? We should reduce the size of Bear's Ears. 46% oppose the action, say we shouldn't reduce the size. It's roughly split. Right? Because there's usually a plus or minus 2 to 3 percentage points to these things. So it's roughly split, but a little more to saying let's reduce the size of Bear's Ears. Now, interesting with Grand Staircase Escalante, 50% of Utahns don't want that monument reduced. 44% do.
Okay.
Okay. So again, it's interesting. I'm sure when Grand Staircase Escalante was first announced by President Clinton, I'm sure it was about 90 to 10.
Yeah, exactly.
So over time.
If not more.
That's an interesting thing. Right. Over time, people have changed their attitudes and seen witnessed or observed, experienced the value of Grand Staircase Escalante.
Absolutely. It is interesting, too, to hear the statistics just for our state, because we are considered, you know, on the national scale to be such a red state that's in such opposition, when really it's kind of split down the middle.
Yeah.
Our legislators certainly don't represent that.
No, not at all.
They're, you know, on a broader scale.
So now let's look at, the most interesting one. When they break down the survey between men and women, what do you get? You get 54% of men want to reduce the size of Bear's Ears. Only 43% of women want to reduce the size of Bear's Ears. So to flip that, 50% of women want Bear's Ears, the size of Bear's Ears to remain as is, while most men want it reduced.
Want it reduced.
Once again, yes. Women have a
it's
better
all about,
clear
it's all about
understanding.
Foresight.
It's about a lot of things, but you got that right. With Grand Staircase Escalante, 55% of women oppose the reduction of Grand Staircase Escalante. Only 46% of men do. So more than half of, again, men want to see Grand Staircase Escalante reduced. So, okay, thank you, women. Thank you. Once again, thank you, women, for helping protect the environment. You guys get it in those instances. So now they break it down by Republicans and Democrats, and there's obvious big differences there.
Yeah, read us those stats.
All right. So if as far as Republicans go, when it comes to Bear's Ears, the reduction of Bear's Ears, it's 70-25 in favor of reducing the size of Bear's Ears. That's for
These
Republicans.
These are Utah Republicans.
Utah Republicans. Okay. Staircase Escalante, 65 want it reduced. That's Republicans. 30% actually say, no, we're all right with the Grand Staircase. Now, with Democrats, it's completely opposite. 91% of Democrats want Bear's Ears to remain as its proposed size. And 91% want the Grand Staircase Escalante to remain in size. So big difference. There. And then there's political ramifications for Mia Love out of district number 4, because in her district, 57% of Salt Lake County residents oppose reduction of Bear's Ears, and 61% of Salt Lake County residents oppose a reduction of the staircase. So you see, Mia Love is in.
Yeah.
She's got. That's why she's a little more purple, mm-hmm. as we just talked before, because she's part of that Climate Solutions Caucus
US. Which was an interesting development, but she may be shifting a little bit back.
Right. And this gives us a little insight as to why. Because her constituents are a lot more Democrats or a lot more environmentalists, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Moderate
or so. Yeah, purple. So that's the survey. The takeaway is good job, women.
And next, we'll have to find that on a national level. I would love to hear what the responses are across the country.
Across the country? Okay.
Yeah, we'll bring that in.
All right, we've got a couple more minutes. Real quick, some numbers that came in from this weekend's hazardous waste collection event sponsored by Sunrise Rotary and Park City Municipal, Summit County, Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, and Recycle Utah. And generally, about 350 cars showed up, which is a little less. They have a little less participation in the fall compared to the spring. They received maybe 10 tons of material total.
Okay.
Paints and other chemicals and electronics, appliances, mattresses, batteries, tons of batteries, car batteries and other smaller batteries. All of that collected, thousands of, of pills and other medicines that were collected. No questions asked. So huge amount of this is tons and tons of material that otherwise would end up in the Summit County landfill, which we all know is an unlined landfill. And so it's a landfill that you want to reduce the amount of chemicals and heavy metals that go into it. Mm-hmm. And that's what this event does. And they did a great job of collecting and taking this stuff. And they now would be put into a controlled landfill, a hazardous waste type of landfill, where that has a bottom liner and a top liner and has much more
designed
controls
for these purposes.
Exactly.
We should also mention, if people miss this event, it happens twice a year. So, you know, if you want to hang on to your things for another 6 months, you can. There are also drop-offs for a lot of these products throughout the year, either at the police station for the medicines, the pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Recycle Utah takes some of these things at other times of year, like batteries. And then there is also a center at the landfill that takes, that will accept certain hazardous materials. So there are options. Don't just throw it in the trash because you missed the event. You have options throughout the year
that
may just be a little further from your doorstep.
Thank you for pointing that out. And last, one more minute or so, you got an event coming up?
Yeah, you know, on October 18th, really quickly, we have an author talking at the Swan River Preserve and Eco Center, Mark Fiji, and he'll be talking about his book, The Republic of Nature, which is an environmental history of the U.S., and it ties in so well with what Will Falk was just talking about. This book looks at our country's history through that lens of nature and environmental history, and so it looks at a lot of the events, the Civil War, the Transcontinental Railroad, you name it, from an environmental lens. And so that's the 18th at 7 p.m. It's free, but we request that people register. And that's in partnership with Utah Humanities as part of the Utah Book Festival.
Perfect. And we hope to get Mark on, if not next week, maybe the following Tuesday, to talk a little bit about him, about the book. All right, we got 1 minute. Let's start our wrap up.
Should we thank our sponsors and underwriters? They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, listeners like you.
Email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. We love to know what you all want to hear about.
And, did you give him the email address?
I did.
I wasn't listening.
You just had zoned out. It was just so boring.
See how much time we had at NPR News. Hey, remember, this is KPCW 91.7 FM, Park City.
Remember, we've got your Wasatch back.
Thanks again. Here's NPR News.